Welcome back to Radio Entrepreneurs. I'm Jonathan Friedman, joined in the studio by Walter Sullivan for our feature, In the Weeds.
It's a great place to be in the weeds.
Absolutely. Walter, always a pleasure. And our next guest up is an exciting entrepreneur, Ross Bradshaw, CEO and founder of New Deal. Welcome, Ross.
Thank you for having me back.
I should say, welcome back. And tell us a little bit about
Jonathan,
your...
Before we tell him, he's an amazing person to have on the show. I truly...
Thank you. Appreciate that.
With the idea of the statute that was created in 2017, creating priorities for registered marijuana dispensaries and for economic empowerment applicants relative to making up for past wrongs. Ross is an economic empowerment applicant.
So tell our listeners who might not know about what that entails and what it's all about. I mean, obviously, you're looking towards bringing to the entrepreneur on the street, so to speak, bringing it to the community.
Of course.
Giving you an opportunity to shine in your home location.
And thank you. I appreciate that. So when voters passed the ballot initiative for Yes on 4, a certain portion of that was creating the state's first equity initiative, which ensured that individuals that had previously been arrested and incarcerated for marijuana prohibition had an opportunity to participate in the cannabis industry in a truly meaningful way. And so if you were an individual that came from a community that had been disproportionately impacted, if you were a minority, or if you were an individual who had business practices that would positively impact those communities, then you would receive a certain designation by the state as economic empowerment. And my company received that such that designation. And as such, we are looking to operate within those communities that have been impacted to provide benefits in the form of employment and in form of reinvestment, and to ensure that this industry is a diverse industry that represents Massachusetts and those individuals that have previously been left behind in the marijuana industry.
I think that's interesting. You're picking communities that have been economically impacted by the war on drugs.
What's actually interesting and unique is that the community in Worcester that we're going to operate in is the same community that I grew up in and is one of those communities that's disproportionately impacted.
And I think that makes a difference in the sense of we talk about economic empowerment. We talk about communities disproportionately represented. But a lot of these businesses are setting up somewhere else.
Correct.
You're going to benefit the community that you grew up in, creating jobs that pay a whole lot better than what... and really giving back to the community that you came from. I think that's a great thing.
Yeah. Right now, we're not seeing that, as you know. Right now, at state level, we're not seeing the results when it comes to creating diverse industry. As of right now, there are only, I believe, 10 economic empowerment applicants that have submitted their documentation to the state, and I believe they're not even 100% complete, so that number is probably even less.
And there was 132 applicants approved as economic empowerment applicants?
123, I believe
123.
So.
I'm dyslexic.
So there you go. It's a relatively small percentage that actually make it through all the hurdles and benchmarks to accomplish it.
Yeah, so I was actually just looking at the figures today. As of right now, there's about 4,000 applicants. No, sorry, not 4,000. There's about 4,000 employees on an employee standpoint that work currently right now in the cannabis industry, and less than 10% are individuals that are African-American or Latino.
Hmm. So... you're hoping to open your facilities, in your neighborhood.
Correct.
And tell us a little bit about the uniqueness of your company and the positioning and what you hope to achieve.
Yeah. So all of our owners are minorities. I myself am biracial, and my two other owners are females, and they're also African-American or Latino descent. In addition to that, we are actually operating in one of these communities, and we're going to be hiring 90% of our staff from that community. And what we're also doing is giving individuals the expertise and the skill set to try to go out and get their own licenses and start their own businesses. One of the types of licenses that will be coming on board is going to be delivery licenses, which is going to require a significant less capital to get involved in this industry. When you look at a retail store, you're looking at roughly $1 million just to get up and running. So obviously, if you come from one of those communities, you don't have access to that capital. You don't have access to those individuals and those networks that can invest in your business. So what we hope is through us providing some guidance and expertise, and then also reducing the caps or the capital requirements with these delivery licenses, we can create more ownership within our community.
Explain, this becomes a big issue. It's, one, getting your application totally through, but more importantly, the financing. And this has been big debates whether the state should get involved in financing, what should happen. There's a bill pending before the legislature from a senator from Worcester that would allow people who are distributing marijuana illegally to be able to pay a fine. That money would go to support economic empowerment applicants and get into business instead of being prosecuted criminally in the criminal system. explain how you were able to go through to be able to find funding to move your store forward and the hard times you had.
Yeah, so I think I have a unique story in the fact that I got involved in the cannabis industry back in 2013, 2014. I was trying to get involved in the medical industry here in Massachusetts. And at that point in time, the capital requirements were tenfold. You had to have $500,000 in liquid assets just to apply for a license. So that obviously wasn't an avenue for me at that point in time. So I started using my skill set as a CPA and an accountant to assist other ancillary businesses in getting involved in cannabis. So luckily, over the years, I had learned how the regulations worked. I had learned how to apply. I learned how to apply for an application. And I was able to go through that application process in Worcester by myself. I did not hire an attorney. I did not hire an accountant. I was able to bootstrap that entire process, which would have most likely cost me upwards of $100,000 just to apply for the city of Worcester. But I was able to use my own expertise and skill sets to do that. Now, when it comes to actually building out and going forward to the state, once again, my background's in finance, so I was lucky enough to find individuals in the cannabis industry that understood my background and my skill set, and we were able to raise the necessary funds for our first establishment.
Well, and I think, you know, based on what you talked about, is that you're not only an economic empowerment applicant, but you developed a really good business plan.
Correct.
And you have a great background, and that really takes you to that next level. Would you agree?
Yes. So someone who does not have any expertise in the cannabis industry, I think it's extremely difficult because, one, you have to have expertise or you have to have capital. And if you have neither, then it's extremely difficult. And one way I think in the future that we can begin to remediate some of those issues is with a state equity fund, as you mentioned before, where individuals can receive low or no interest loans to start their business. But at the same time, there also has to be mirrored with education on terms of the regulations and the application process. My organization, NUDIA, hopes to provide that education piece. And if we are successful, we would love to be able to help provide capital and some type of benefit to individuals that are looking to start their own operations.
Now, the Cannabis Control Commission voted yesterday to move forward to benefit just economic and social equity applicants, both on delivery licenses, ancillary business, yep, which the Cannabis Control Commission has been pushing for some economic empowerment applicants to get into because it's a little bit easier without licensing and funds you need. They also voted for social consumption licenses that will go to equity applicants first because it gives them a way to get in.
Yep.
But you still run into the issue of funding.
Yeah, you're still looking at a couple hundred thousand. I was actually just looking at the math the other day. Given the security requirements, the fact that you have to have two individuals within each vehicle, you still have to go through the application process. You're still looking at a couple of $100,000 to get this operation up, yep, and running. And your margins most likely are going to be reduced because you can't buy from a wholesale operation. You have to buy from a retailer. So I still have to crunch the numbers, but I still struggle with seeing if it's going to be that profitable in terms of the capital expense you'll have to put in to start that type of business.
Amazon's not funding it.
Well, and they actually...
Uber is.
But when you look at delivery operations, usually you have FedEx, you have Amazon, you have those mass scale types of operations. You don't typically see the smaller operators doing that because it just doesn't economically make sense. So I think we're going to have to crunch the numbers a little bit more on that, and if it's going to work.
It's not as simple as it all sounds. I mean, we had a transportation company on the show a little earlier today, and you look at is OxyContin's delivered in a tractor trailer with one driver, and really doesn't have the system that we have to do deliveries, both transportation from business to business and also home delivery.
Of course,
requires a lot more and isn't really needed. So, I mean, and that keeps people from getting into business.
Yes, I agree. So one of the other things I do outside of NUDIA is I'm also the co-founder of a not-for-profit, which goes by the name of EON, Equitable Opportunities Now. We're Massachusetts' first and only active not-for-profit that provides education and activism for minorities that want to get involved in this industry. And one of the things that we've realized through our work is one way in which we can begin to foster and create that diversity we want is working with municipalities when it comes to awarding host agreements to have a process at the city and state town level that encourages diversity, that encourages minorities and low-income individuals to get involved in the cannabis industry, because unless they have that support at that level, they can't get to the process where they can get a state license.
No. And they need to understand that it's not just about I'm an applicant. You got to show that you know what you're doing. People, they like you, they know you, and they're willing to work with you in the communities. And I think really that's hard, and having the financing is the biggest issue. What would you advise economic empowerment applicants? I mean, right now, there are no more economic empowerment applicants. The law passed. The only thing we're dealing with next is social equity. As we said, there's 123 applicants, but only 10 applications have been filed. What would you advise these people looking to move their economic empowerment status forward?
Well, first and foremost, you have to educate yourself on the industry in Massachusetts. You have to understand the regulations in and out so you can understand, you know, how to go about applying once you receive that funding. But also, you have to look at the landscape of Massachusetts. You know, where can you actually open and operate if you are an economic empowerment applicant? One of the things that I argue is that the window is closing on this ability to create diversity in Massachusetts, because cities and towns, if they haven't already met their quota of the minimum amount of dispensaries or the maximum amount of dispensaries that they can have in their community, they're getting close to it. So I struggle with identifying communities in the Commonwealth that actually are going to continue to have more
additional opportunities.
Right. Exactly. And if there's slim to few, I mean, is that really going to create a significant amount of opportunity for individuals that have less capital?
I think you mentioned maximum. Well, the statute only really talks about minimum. And we can talk about, you know, towns and cities have to have a minimum of 20% of the package stores that they have.
Exactly.
The reality is that has become a lot of cities and towns' maximum, at least for now, you know, until they realize that this is not the business that people should be afraid of. It's like any other legal business. If done right, everyone makes out. As you're looking at that, I find, you know, Cambridge, Somerville have really moving forward with economic empowerment applicants, social equity applicants, women and minority-owned businesses, and, of course, RMDs. Boston really hasn't developed a plan. How are you going out to communities? Because, as you're right, it's the municipalities, like, really trying to get them on board that this is a good thing to help economic empowerment applicants move forward. Like, what type of advocacy are you doing?
So it's really boots on the ground. You're 100% right. So we're also applying in other locations, and before you even go to the municipality, well, and hand in hand when going to municipality, you also should find who are the stakeholders in that community, who are the well-respected individuals that can buy into your business, can buy into your mission, and can benefit from your operation. And that's one of the reasons why we were so successful in Worcester, is that we were able to find those individuals that had built a reputation in the community and understood our mission, in that we were looking to create value beyond just a cannabis establishment. We were looking to create individuals that would have, we would create opportunities for individuals to put meals on the table and to build a sustainable and a potentially profitable career. And that's something that doesn't come by too often, especially in low-income communities.
How do you deal? So, you know, as we know, marijuana is zoned into certain regions of communities. And there are limited properties that are available. Economic empowerment applicants really have to look at lease properties versus owning because of the cost. You can't get property that's owned by a bank. Excuse me, that has a mortgage on it because the banks won't let it. Then you find a property, but then you're in competition against the big guys because you can pay more rent. And then the process, this is a long-worded.
No, I know exactly where you're going with it.
And then the long process of getting licensed where you're paying an option payment. Like, how do you deal with those issues for helping economic empowerment applicants out?
It's a tough question, and I don't think there's a real solution. From my personal experience, I had that happen to me, and I had to move locations because a big MSO, a multi-state operator, came within my buffer zone, and I knew I was going to lose that battle. I did not have the capital to fight them for that for a location, so essentially I found another location. So you have to be flexible, but you also, if you can build a rapport with the landlord, if you can build a rapport with the city so that they can help you and assist you, that's the only way I think you can make it work, because you're 100% right. Before even getting a state license, some of these groups are pouring in $500,000 just in the application portion, just to compete for a license. A lot of folks can't do that. So you have to come up with the alternative approach, and that's what we did, and that was a more of a grassroots approach with the community.
How do you convince your landlord to invest in you versus wait for one of the big guys?
I had a solid business plan, I had experience, and I had a mission that he understood was going to be beneficial to the community.
Really interesting stuff, Ross. Ross Bradshaw, CEO and founder of Nudea. It sounds like, you know, you've really tapped into that, not only the mission-driven organization, but connecting with the community and building up that economic opportunity in the local community. So congratulations.
Thank you.
We look forward to having you back yet again and talking about the progress made. And I wish you continued success on the path towards licensure and opening.
Thank you.
And a wonderful story. Our guest has been Ross Bradshaw, CEO and founder of Nudea. Ross, if people want to get in touch with you, what's the best way for them to reach out to you?
They can reach me at ross@nudea.co or nudea.com,
Ross,
and then also social media.
Can you also give the information on your nonprofit to help?
Yes, 100%. So it's Eon, and we can be reached at masseon.com. And once again, on social media is probably the best. We have a number of events throughout the year where we provide free of charge education in the cannabis industry to anyone who wants to learn more.
Excellent. Our guest again has been Ross Bradshaw, CEO and founder of Nudea. And I'm Jonathan Friedman alongside Walter Sullivan. And you're listening to In the Weeds by Radio Entrepreneurs.